This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. Tom Burgoyne joined by John Brazier. And great day today, John. This is a little different. We're at the Philadelphia Cricket Club for the annual Phillies Golf Classic.
We just had Alumni Weekend. This is an extension of Alumni Weekend. And, Tom, we'll talk about this after we have our guest on. But I'm telling you, I love this weekend. You see guys that you used to work with, see guys you used to follow as a kid. You see guys just, you know, all walks of life. And we see some down at Fantasy Camp. We see some of them, you know, throughout the area, especially if they live in Philadelphia. But it's so awesome to see Steve Carlton and, right, and even guys like Sarge.
Well, see Steve Carlton. Weren't you hanging out at the bar, like, the whole weekend with Steve Carlton?
I got a selfie with Steve Carlton.
I know. You posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, he's looking at me. He's like, what are you doing? I said, a selfie. He's like, all right, whatever. So we will talk about that. But all right, very excited for our guest there.
We have a great guest, a friend of ours. It's great to see him because he's one of the guys we see frequently, but we haven't seen you in a while.
But not enough.
L. C. Larry Christensen.
How is this Harry Callis?
I know.
He's great. Harry the K. We had so many great years with Harry the K. And first of all, thank you guys for having me on, John and Tom, and a great weekend. And I know when I walked to the booth to do a TV interview, I walked right by Harry Callis's, you know, broadcast yep. room, and with his and we go way back, and I kind of have a little bit of part of that coining the Harry the K,
because really?
It was Harry the K that he would call me LC, and I'd go Harry the K when we were playing golf, and then it was when he'd make a putt, it was Kalunk. And I go, Harry the K, Kalunka. And Whitey Ashburn, too, when playing, you know, he'd be over a putt. And his famous one is, this is a lock.
This is the lock, right, boys.
Right, so great memory just even bringing
well,
up.
Well, and Harry game, used know. To, I remember out here, we're at Philly Cricket for our golf outing. Harry would, I think this is later in his life, he didn't golf at that point. He would putt.
He would putt for everybody. Contest.
And he had all these different, kind of like Tug, right? Tug had all the different clubs in his bag that he used to call different names, right?
Yeah. Oh, the Texas wedge was one of them. He had his Texas wedge, but his putter was the, you know, anytime you got over a putt, before it went in the hole, he would go, Kalunka.
Yeah, Richie.
If he missed his, oh.
Yeah, anyway. Harry's the best, and we saw Video Dan over the weekend, and whenever I see Video Dan, I talk to him in Harry Callis.
Oh, yeah, we all do.
I go, Vidage, how's Vidage?
Vidage and Chainage. Yeah. LC, you're one of the guys who still lives in the area, but how great is it when everybody comes into town for these weekends?
Yeah, well, it's terrific, and the Phillies organization has, and I played my whole career here, number one.
Which is very unique, especially in this day and age.
Yeah, with Ryan Howard now joining the club, now it makes five that have played over 10 years with the Phillies and only the Phillies, which is, because I follow that because it's in a book and that I, you know, kind of they bring it up as a trivia question quite a bit. But anyway, the great weekend, and it is the 80 reunion, even 2 years late. So we get everybody together and get to see all these faces. And a lot of people that we haven't seen in probably, you know, we had a 10-year and had a 20-year. And so now it's been a few years since we had a lot of these 80 guys together. So with including their wives or their significant others. So, and the Middletons did a fabulous job. You know, John is the new owner as far as we, you know, we had Ruley Carpenter and then, you know, the Giles group and Bill. And so, I mean, I love all of them. And I think John's, just really doing a fabulous job and really takes this to heart this weekend, this reunion weekend.
And, you know, he also brought back the Carpenter family because they all were the whole group of them.
Yeah.
Rulli's wife and kids
and David.
Cousins. So that was nice to see, too, to bring back the old ownership.
Yeah.
But it was so cool to see guys like Del Unser and Greg Gross. And I think Kevin Saucier was here, right?
Yeah, Sauce was here.
And Bob Walk was here, right?
Walk took it. He was in Baltimore, and so he drove up, and they gave him the one day off. So, I mean, here he is. He's worked his whole career, and he's going to retire in another year or so and work kind of part-time. And I had a good visit with Bob, and he was doing the reunion on the field and then going back to meet the team to fly to Arizona. He says, I've had enough of this. You know, he's 65 or whatever. But good to see Bob. And like Sauce is, you know, kind of semi-retired now, I guess, but he was involved in baseball for many years. And Marty Bystrom's in Florida now, coming up. And Bo is always the bangwanger that gets you. He starts chirping, and he can't stop. And he was on fire the whole weekend, and especially his target was Bull.
They almost got into Bull. punching each other on the field.
Wasn't there a story at one point where Bull literally – Bo was chirping back as a player. Bo was chirping, and Bull, the story I heard, grabbed him by the neck, lifted him up against the wall.
Well, not only that, and one time in Houston, Schmitty had enough of him, and finally he grabbed him by the neck and was going to run his head right into a steel pillar. And, you know, he was, and Lefty would, you know, once I said, well, Bonesy, I said, here comes Lefty. Like, once you said, you know, he would become silent. And so, and Lefty once in a while would go over to his chair and grab him by the neck and the face and go, oh, I'm going to tear your head off. And so, but we had I've got great memories of a great organization and team and teammates. And not to mention, you know, winning the World Series with the spark plug in Pete Rose, I'm sure we're going to get to, but to have played my whole career here and just have those memories of playing in a great era of baseball. We were about baseball, not about money. It was about baseball. And I have nothing against the guys that make the money, but we were the ones that really had through strikes and lockouts that we didn't really understand a lot about, but we knew what we were doing, but we didn't understand what it would come to, which has become, you know, an amazing.
And talk about that journey, because, you know, again, you were there that whole time. In the 70s, we were so close. You know, we had some great teams in 76, 77, 78, right?
Yeah.
And then you get Pete Rose in 79, and then finally get it in 80. But you were so close, and there's some controversies with Black Monday, and right?
Yeah.
And,
we had some downers, and I remember pitching. I was the one that pitched that game. I started that game against Bert Hooten, and he walked me. I mean, I should have swung and hit a grand slam, but the reason why he walked all those two, and they haven't brought this up, and it's good. It just popped in my mind that Booney's catching, and I got in a little bit of a jam, and there was somebody got a base hit, and Garvey's on second base, and he rounds third and comes into home. Harry Wendelstadt, the umpire. Boone takes the throw, tags Garvey out. I'm right behind backing up, and I watch the play right in front of me. Garvey's out. There's no instant replays.
Right.
He's out, and Harry Wendelstadt called him safe. And I never get on umpires, but I went up right to him, and Booney turns around, and I said, Harry, you blew it. I said, you blew it. He was out, and he was white as a ghost. I think he knew it.
Right.
But then, during that, and Bert Hooten's pitches were right up over the strike zone, all of them, those knuckle curves, and he went crazy. And the fans,
fans got into it.
They've never left that moment. They're still
classic.
In that moment. So
you're saying Wendelstadt was a little, maybe pitching him just because he's making up a little bit for the blown call.
I think so. That's my recollection. And then, you know, when Danny Ozark did not put Jerry Martin to replace Bull, but you know, Bull could have caught that ball, but he didn't. But Jerry, who knows? You know, would he have caught it? Probably. But they always put him out there on defense in late innings, and so that's another story. And then the other story about with Davey Lopes, and the ball off of Schmidt over to Boa, and I forget, it was a different game, I think, and it might have been the same. I don't know. But anyway, Boa's throw and Davey Lopes is out. We know it. We all know. Everybody knows it. No, again, no instant replay.
No instant
replay. There is now to correct it. And that would have taken us.
Yep.
And then with Lefty and that rain-soaked
rain game.
The commissioner sitting in the rain, and all these people sitting in the rain, and Tommy John just, You gutted it
all
out.
Right, we got to, I'm sorry, we got to fast forward to 1980. You're killing me, LSC. Those 3 years were just so brutal, yeah. Those playoffs. But, and I heard it a little bit this weekend from players, it was kind of do or die in 1980, right? It was like, listen, this basically the nucleus had been together, some brutal losses those 3 years, 79 not making the playoffs. It was kind of, did you feel that in the clubhouse going into that season?
Yeah, but, you know, it was a weird year for me, 1980, because I think I got off, I won, I think, three games, and then I ended up having, I had terrible arm problems, yeah. And back problems. I just had surgery on my back, but I had terrible back problems and had to play through all that. But we all played hurt, but I ended up having to have elbow surgery, probably my second or third one. I forget which one it was, but I had bone spurs taken out in late May. And then I was back pitching again in probably August. So June, July, August, I rehabbed mostly in Washington State. But it was a lot of turnover. We look at the team picture from back then and a whole bunch of guys, yeah, that were not on the final roster. And I can't name all of them, but there was a whole bunch that we were looking at the other day, yesterday. So, but then the final version of we kept winning. So that's what you have to do at the end of the season, as you know.
Yep.
And a lot of Phillies lore lately has been, you know, if you don't keep winning, you know, you don't advance. So we kept winning, and especially winning that game in Montreal when Dick Williams in Montreal did not walk Mike Schmidt to get to McCormick, and
right.
Schmidt hits the home run.
Right.
And I started that game, too. I remember we had a big rain delay. I read a novel before the game started.
Yeah.
It was such a long – so we've got a lot of memories, and yes, and I think, you know, Pete Rose was the spark plug to and then, you know, the guys like the Mike Schmitz, and you mentioned Del Unser.
Well, I was gonna say
Gross.
Yeah, because I was just gonna say it's like, you guys, a winning team always has, you know, obviously you have a great starting lineup, but it's always those role players and all the different times the Phillies have won, and whether it's 2008, 1983, now 1980, and you had, in that series, the Houston series alone, Del Unser and Greg Gross, I mean, just coming up, hit after hit after hit, coming off. I think, isn't Del like one of the all-time leaders, or maybe it's Greg?
Pinch hits.
In pinch hits.
Yeah.
Gigi, right.
I call them frickin' frack.
Right.
Yeah, frickin' frack.
But also you had, you know, you mentioned Marty Bystrom.
Yeah.
Bystrom comes up, right, towards the end of the year.
It's 5-0.
And goes 5-0, right? So that, yeah. Here you're yeah. Who would have thought you'd be banking on a young kid, right?
Well, and let's talk about that. And well, Bob Wall came up similar fashion, yeah. But also you had the Keith Morlands and the Lonnie Smiths,
right.
Who really contributed that
Ooh,
year.
Dallas, that was shook it up with, you know, with Lozinski and Maddox and later in that season, you know, replacing some of our veterans with, you know, Lonnie'd go out to left, or and then even Dell went out to center field for a while, and Keith Moreland went behind the plate, and they contributed, and they were great, and Lonnie was, you know, skates, and
yep.
So yeah, you bring up a lot of memories, and I mean the pitching staff changed over and we were fighting for the end, and a couple of guys had to drop off like Nino Espinosa and Randy Lurch. I felt terrible for them, and Dallas, I was in his doghouse for, you know, I don't know why, but well, a few reasons why. But anyway, I mean, I had to fight fighting with arm problems and, you know, physically, but again, like I said, we all did, but it came down to you know, that final Tug McGraw pitch. Houston was loud. It was so loud you couldn't hear yourself think. I remember I lost the 1-0 10-inning. I didn't lose it, but I'd got no decision. And I started the game, and we ended up losing 1-0 to Joe Niekro, pitched a fabulous game. And then to be able to come back in that last game against Nolan Ryan, who had, I think, maybe two times in his career had ever lost by after he was leading.
Right, in the sixth
and
inning.
And we came back, and that was when the Greg Gross bunt.
Yep.
And the Del Unser double. And
then went off the glove, right?
Yeah.
Didn't one go off his glove?
Yeah.
And it was just so, boom, boom, boom. And it all happened on the first pitches. It was
right.
He had no time
first
to figure
pitch,
out.
Well, Gigi said, I'm going to do it the first pitch. What do you think he's going to do? He's probably going to knock me on my rear end if I try to bunt on it, you know. And so Nolan Ryan got flustered, and thank God we came back and But from then on, the World Series, well, to me, was kind of a whiz. My father, he went into a coma. He was in the hospital, and I was ready to maybe even leave the team to go. It was very frustrating for me, including just having, you know, physical problems, and my arm was just worn out. And so it was a tough year, but – But I do remember that Houston series. I remember that much more than the World
Series. Well, and they say that's the greatest playoff series in Major League Baseball history.
Four extra inning games out of five. Yep. Remember, and go back to the 70s, sorry, Tom, but, you know, those are five-game series, and you only have to win three. You lose your first one. I mean, you're behind. It's tight.
Yeah, anything can happen in one of those series.
It's still now, you know, they got the one-game playoff, and if you lose, it's, you know, you remember the winners, but you don't forget the losers, but it hurts those guys that lost. You know, they.
I don't think they're doing that anymore, though, right? I don't think they're doing one-game playoffs. It's now best out of three.
Now they have the
best out of three, but all three games are on the road.
Right. They used to have the wild card, but now they, right. So.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I have to ask you, because you mentioned his name, Tug, and Scott Palmer came into my office yesterday. And I said, hey, we got LC on the podcast. He's like, oh. And, of course, you know, the story. And then Video Dan comes into my office, and we're talking 1980. It was all 1980 all over again. Scott said, you got to ask LC about Tug. You know, they had such a great relationship. And I'm sure you talk about stories. You've got a lot about Tug, I'm sure.
Yeah, Tug, when he turned into a little leprechaun, I was kind of the only guy that could really want to hang around and be. We have some great Tug McGraw stories. It was wonderful yesterday to see his son Mark and Matthew, and it was so great to see those guys. And you see Tim, but they all just kind of look just like. Even Matthew looks just like. And Mark
actually
is different. Mark
Matthew
is
like a spitting image.
Yeah,
right. Matthew looks like a little Tug.
Yeah. Yeah, so Tug, when Matthew was young, you know, he would come over, and my daughters, and I was the chef, and Matthew wouldn't eat vegetables, and I was reminding him that we'd have bean races, string beans, you know, cook string beans to get him to eat his vegetables. So, you know, but it was great to see him, and I took a selfie with him and with Mark, and sent it to my daughters, and they love Matthew and Mark, but Matthew especially because he was the same age. So,
but Tug was just such a character, right?
Tug was. Was an incredible character. But in 1980, that year when he pitched three innings, two innings, maybe one, but sometimes, you know, he was out there almost every night. His arm was hanging. And, I mean, that last pitch to Willie Wilson was right down the middle, if you notice. That was a grand slam pitch or whatever, but he didn't have much gas in the tank left.
Right.
But Tug, you never knew what was coming. And he was so talented as a pitcher and as a, I mean, He was just had that screwball and he you never knew that zip on his fastball, and he could hit spots, and he really could pitch.
I like the fact that he named his pitches.
Oh
right?
Yeah,
he had the Peggy Lee,
the Peggy Lee, and the Cuddy,
Cuddy
Sark, which was a cutter.
Derek had the little tail on it.
Yeah, a little tail on it. Yeah.
Well, and Scott said, he would come up to Tug would come up to LC and say, "Hey, you pitching today?" And what would Tug say?
So I'm starting a game in the locker room. What happens with the starters? The starters come in pretty much a little bit later than everybody taken, but you know, you get your uniform. You don't want to spend a lot of time in the locker room and hang out, but you know, you want to. So you walk in and you come in through the front door, and pretty much everybody's already in the locker room, and you sign the pass list if you've got somebody coming to the game with tickets or whatever, and then you carry on to your locker, which is to the left, and I've got to pass, you know, the Ron Reed, Tug McGraw, and get to my locker, and Steve Carlton's on my right, so I'd come right up to Tug, and Tug would announce to everybody loud enough, "LC, you pitching tonight?" And I said, "Yes, I am, Tug." He said, "So am I." So am I means, yes, I'll be in relief of you. Which when he didn't do a very good job of it. But I later in the in his career. We lived close by, and then Tug actually lived with me for a while, and then I remember doing the eulogy at his services, and I remember Warren Brewster came up and grabbed his container of ashes and the urn, and I go, it was a box, a wooden box. I go, what's that? And I said, I was wondering where is Tug, by the way, you know. So I didn't. I mean, I was pretty much, you know, much in a moment with that. But that was the sad. That was a sad day. How we lost Tug with that glioblastoma and brain cancer, and all of the other guys along with
Vuk him. And Dick Dutch, Dick Houser, I know, and a lot of baseball guys, Joe Carter and Darren Dalton, obviously,
or Gary Carter.
What did I say?
Joe.
I'm sorry, Gary. Yeah, right.
Joe's still with us.
Gary Carter. But it goes on and on. Ken Brett, right? And
yeah, Kenny Brett, John Oates, John Vukovich, I think you mentioned, but a lot of guys. I mean, you know, we don't know. It's called a cluster, but you don't really know about if it was, you know, what happened, and you know, a lot of us still, you know, former players from Veterans Stadium, the old days of the Vet, but now, you know, now you carry it on to present with that new ballpark, and it's you know, it's a beautiful place, and you know, Philly fans are great, and we move on. We have great memories from the 80 team, and it was really nice for the Philly to do what they did to honor us all. And
well, speaking of memories, and we have to touch on Lefty, because again, Lefty, you're tight with Lefty in the rotation. Talk about Lefty. What made him unique? I know, you know, there's a legendary story of Gus Heffling, and he would put his arm in the in the thing of rice. Did he ever try to convert you to his training methods?
Well, I did several because of all of my injuries and issues that I had. I did the Mike Marshall kinesiology program, and actually even taught it to a few of the guys. And Gus was, I trained with Gus all winter long, and a lot of us did. And then, but you know, the martial arts part, Gus is, you know, was a lot of stretching and exercises, and then training. I trained with Lefty, you know, arm in arm, leg to leg, in the rice trough. Yes, I was down in the rice bucket with, I don't know if I ever got to the bottom, but Lefty, you know, Lefty did, and a lot of the players did, but to strengthen things. And but you know what it is, it's about being, Lefty is positive, he's a positive person, and he also now he just looks forward. He doesn't care about the memory. He's a unique man. I mean, he's one of my best friends. Actually, a guy named Bill Cachetis just wrote a book called Lefty and Tim, and I wrote the foreword. I told Bill, I said, you want to write a book about Lefty? I said, you can't write a book about Lefty without Tim McCarver.
Right.
He was also with us this weekend, and Timmy and Lefty, I'm in touch with all the time, and they're by, but you know what? I got to say that they were good to me. Lefty was good to me when I was a 19-year-old in the major leagues, and I had no idea. And Lefty protected me from all those, like even the little chirping boa that was over there, kept an eye on him and kept him off my. But boa hasn't stopped to this day. So now, I mean, you know, we're used to it. But I look at like Dick Allen and Pete Rose. They were good to me, and I'm friends with them. And so I remember the guys that were good to me, and I remember the guys that I kind of, and those, you know, that. Like Bull didn't like pitchers, and like Tommy Underwood and I were the,
right.
Coined us the Gold Dust Twins. Yeah, the Gold Dust Twins are 20, we pitch every 4 to 5 days and then sit on your butt the rest of the time.
And you were so young. I mean, you started 19 years old.
Yeah, I was 19.
You made your debut.
Won the debut, and then I got, you know, had to do some seeds. And then I had elbow surgery that winter and started my elbow surgery.
No, I'm thinking of the collarbone. When you fell off the bike.
The downfall of my career because of Tug. So I blame it on that. That one's on Tug, too.
You should blame Tug on that.
So, right, Tug convinced you to go out on a bike?
Yeah, it was a charity thing.
Yeah, the charity thing. He came in the locker room when we were working out in the wintertime. He came running in there. And Roman Gabriel happened to be in there, too, because he trained with Gus with the Eagles. And so he's in there in the 77, I guess it was, in the winter, and he said, guys, I'm running to Florida. He said, come and join me. And Gabe says, I can't run, I got bad knees. He said, why don't we take bikes? And Tug said, okay, for Muscular Dystrophy Association. So we took off from Florida on a I mean, took off from Philadelphia Veterans Stadium with the big hoopla on like a February 10th, I think was the day. But there was like 10 inches of snow.
Yeah. And you're going to bike all the way down to Florida?
Yeah, 10 inches of bike. I rode over the Penrose Bridge, and Gabe and I were up on top, and Lefty and Tugger and Jerry Martin are cranking back in the back. We get up to the top, and these, you know, it's icy and slippery. It's just, you can't really ride a bike. We got down the other side and loaded the loaded the bikes into the van, and then we got in the Winnebago and started, well, libation started, and Tugger turned into the leprechaun and got into the Jack Daniels, and I mean the Jack. And then we get all the way. We drive all the way to the White House. We pull up to the White House to go visit Jimmy Carter, but he happens not to be in. But we did make it down to Plains,
Jimmy
Georgia.
Carter.
We did make it to Plains, Georgia, to visit Billy, and Billy at the gas station. Billy Carter. Remember the Billy Beer?
Yeah, sure, Billy Beer.
So we had Billy Beer taken out, and Roman Gabriel's pouring it out because it tastes so bad. And Tug gets a bottle of Jameson. I'm sorry, not Jack Daniels. Jameson Irish whiskey. Correct myself.
Right,
my God.
Accuracy.
With me. So Jameson out with Billy, and we've got pictures of that. That was one of the greatest stories.
So
and
you
that,
guys made it down to Florida?
Yes. Well, getting there, we had to take a little time. Then we had to we then that night had to play against the Plains, Georgia, some coaches and things at the high school. We played in front of, and Miss Lillian, Tug fell off of his bike drunk in front of Miss Lillian Carter with their dog. You can't make this stuff up. And then we go out and play basketball that night, and Lefty's not really good about it. And I'm the only real hoop player.
Well, you're a stud basketball player in high school, right?
I was like the All-American basketball player a couple of years, and baseball player. But anyway, so these guys were, everybody was pretty, we had our fun, you know. And then we out, and down in the basketball court, it was not pretty. So we were going back and forth, and Lefty didn't really like running up and down the court. He didn't like running, right?
No.
So anyway, we had a lot of laughs, and we had a good time, and then we carried on, and those were that's the start of the disco era too, boy, which I remember, and I was intrigued, And I remember going down, when I got to Florida, I went to go take disco lessons, and it was starting the greatest part of my life.
When did you fall off?
The next year, I get so caught up in my disco stuff. So we biked and did events at banquets, and Tug pulled some really good ones. I mean, from mooning the crowd to doing other, I mean, it went on and on. I mean, all the way to Jacksonville, Daytona, and then from Orlando, and then we had so much fun in Daytona. We went from Orlando, and the limo drivers couldn't drive anymore because Tug got them owned up. And then
got him
Carlton and Roman Gabriel drove the limos from Orlando back to Daytona at about 2 o'clock in the morning to go to Big Daddy's. And then it was a long story. We ended up in Clearwater. The next year, the idea was to go from my home. I said, why don't we go from my hometown of Marysville, Washington? And so we did. From Marysville, Washington. We had a big party the night before. And
we went from Washington to Florida?
Washington State to San Diego.
Oh.
Another group of guys went down, and Hasselbeck or whoever he was, he got hit by a truck or something on the way to Florida, and we went down from Marysville, Washington to San Diego, California. Huh. Well, I didn't quite make it.
I went from Marysville, Washington,
and in Marysville, California, there was some Tug and I are drafting behind a vehicle, which makes it you go faster, you know, having the resistance for the wind, and I don't see these railroad tracks coming up, and they're right in front of me, and all of a sudden, I kind of pop my tire over my front over the first rail, and then it started like a little diagonally, and there was a rut. Well, my front tire took a left.
And caught in the rut.
And I went over the handlebars, ass over, you know, and I went down and shattered my right collarbone.
Yeah.
And I was sitting up, and I was in shock, and then all the guys stopped and were around me, and I'm going, you know, this is not good. Something's wrong here, and so I go to the hospital. You know, Marysville's right near Sacramento, and I think it was out of Sacramento. And the guy's from Philadelphia, and he said, you shattered your collarbone. Mm. So that night, we end up, I mean, terrible. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And so we kind of had a going-away party for me because I got to get on a plane the next morning and fly to Philadelphia.
And what year was this, LC?
This is 78 now.
78, okay.
Winter of 78.
Going into the 79 season?
Probably going into the 78
season. 78
season, okay. Because I had that surgery before the season was over with and went and had my collarbone. They chiseled a bone off my collarbone after it healed up, put it that way.
Well,
Dr. Marone set my collarbone in Veterans Stadium and put a body cast on me. And now the funny part is that Larry Boa knew of this, and I've got a body cast on, and I'm now, it's before spring training, and they're all getting ready and down in spring training. And this guy named Gary, the ground crew guy, brings a parrot back from his work down in South America.
No.
So the parrot in the locker room. This is a true story. You can't make this stuff up.
No,
so,
no,
so
you can't.
And Boa teaches the parrot to say, Elsie. Effed up. Elsie effed up. Elsie effed up. So I come into the, I make my appearance, and that parrot is on the shoulder of the ground crew guy, and Boa walks it over and just said, Elsie. And so Elsie, and that parrot didn't stop. That parrot didn't stop, and that locker room just cracked.
Oh, my God, that must have been hilarious.
But I ended up pitching in May and started.
Yeah, you came back, Elsie.
Came back right away. So I always, Don Seeger, our trainer, said, best I ever seen it. Best I ever seen at healing and coming back because I had to because I was hurt all the time.
And John, you're always fascinated with my friend, the Fanatic LC. He loves when a player gets introduced, you know, what's the Fanatic going to do? And when LC gets introduced, the Fanatic always like clutches his shoulder, and then it's his elbow and it's his leg. And
Now you have to do a parrot. And Fanatic would have to do a parrot now.
Parrot. But now that I have you, I do talk to the Fanatic frequently, LC. And, you know, if that ever offends you that the Fanatic is kind of making fun of all your ailments, you know, let me know and I'll let the Fanatic know.
I think the Fanatic's fine with it. The Fanatic is our friend and has been for many years, and we love the Fanatic. The Fanatic is the most famous, you know, the chicken. They had some competition way back when, but now the chicken is pretty much
chicken forgotten. Was a radio station mascot. The Fanatic is a team mascot.
That's right, team mascot.
Chicken was never the San
chicken
Diego.
Chicken got exactly. too much trouble.
Yeah he did. He got into a lot of trouble.
Hey, question for you. We have a quiz, by the way.
Okay.
But before we get to the quiz, one thing we haven't talked about, we talked about your pitching and the team, but we didn't talk about your hitting because I think if I'm not mistaken, you were tied with Rick Wise for the most home runs for a Phillies pitcher.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So
with 11.
Yeah, so talk about that. I mean, did you pride yourself on hitting back then?
Well, I mean, I was a good athlete in high school, and I came right out of high school, and I mean, I hit 450 in high school, but I also went from high school to pitch against the big leaguers, and how I made that team when I was 19 is I could throw the ball, I mean, it had to be 100 miles an hour, and they couldn't, I mean, even these big leaguers couldn't hit me, they couldn't touch me. I mean, Cincinnati Reds, the Red Sox, you name it, I faced all these, and I didn't really know who these guys were, because I didn't follow baseball, I was a basketball player,
right.
I liked basketball, and so, you know, then you take batting practice and hit. And I remember throwing batting practice. I wasn't going to let these, you know, I was trying to make the team and stuff. And I remember guys didn't want to get in there. And they were, whoa, slow this down. You know, I'm not going to. They weren't ready to face live pitching and somebody that's throwing, you know, that hard and even a little bit wild at the same time. But I started, my first major league hit when I got sent down, when I got drafted, I went to Pulaski, Virginia. Matter of fact, in John Middleton's home is hanging my Jim Bunning hand-me-down jersey that I wore with my name in it wore in Pulaski.
Wow.
And I saw that, which was cool. Wow. When I was 18
awesome.
Years old, and Jeff Cooper was my trainer in Pulaski, so we were both standing underneath and looking at it. And then I went to Mary Bunning, who was up there, and told her about this jersey story anyway, getting
That's
off
cool.
track. But my first hit was a home run in Pulaski. My second game, I went 3-for-4. And then end up having back problem because the pitching coach tried to change my style after I was 2-0 and struck out 1815 and had 4 hits in the first 2 games. And so, got it. You're not doing it right. You
know,
change your style. Well, he got fired. But then I swung a 36-inch, 36-ounce P89 Louisville slugger. Dick Allen swung a 40-to-42-ounce P89 Louisville slugger, 36-inch. You know, and so the greatest story I like to tell is that, you know, yes, I hit some home. My first major league hit was a home run. And then from there, it was, you know, sometimes they would even tell you, say, just go up and get it over with and not really worry about, you know, get on because you want to get on the field and, we don't want you running out.
Tying yourself out of
triple,
the bases.
And plus, I'd pull hamstrings and groins all the time. So, but I loved swinging the bat, and everybody said, oh, your bat's too big. I said, I always swung a big, heavy bat. So, but the greatest hitting story is the take pride in the day that We were in New York. We were in the slide in 1976 in September, and we're in a skid a la 64. Mm. And we're facing the Mets in New York at Shea Stadium. And really, I mean, that was the team that I could sit in the dugout, throw my glove on the mound to beat the Mets. But Bobby Wine, who was there, he loved throwing. He was a good batting practice pitcher, you know. And I brought two bats with me because I'm only pitching once on this road trip. And I break both of my 36-ounce bats, game bats. And I go, oh, my God, what do I do? So I go, oh, my God, I got to go talk to Dick Allen. So I went over to Dick, who's got a cigarette on the field, right, out of his mouth. You know, guys smoked into the dugout, yep, and smoked even on the field. And Dick Allen does whatever he wants, right? So, and Dick was, like I said, he was good to me, and I loved him as a teammate. And so I went up to Dick, and I said, Dick, I said, I just broke both of my bats in batting practice. My God, he said, you're the only one that swings a big bat like I do. I said, can I use your bat for the game? And he said, he puts a cigarette in his mouth, takes the glove off of the bat, which he carries around, his glove, his bat, and his helmet. Yeah. He's got the cigarette, and he takes his glove off, and he hands me the bat, and he said, son, if you can swing it, you can use it.
Right.
And Mickey Lolich is pitching for the Mets and on the downside of his career. Yeah. And the first at bat, and this was, I load the bases the first inning and get out with one run. Oh, my God, I was almost out of the game.
Right.
So I almost didn't get to bat at all. So I carry this big bat up there, and John Bad Dude Stearns is the catcher, and Mickey Lolich is on the mound, and Joe Torre's their manager, and they got Rusty Staub and whoever. So I hit this slider like hanging out over the plate, and I just clocked it over where the apple was in left center field.
But Dick Allen must have been so proud, right?
Well, he's on first base. Yeah, I mean, but he was in the dugout during that time. But nobody knows in the dugout. Yeah, only Dick knows that I'm using. He's not telling everybody, hey, he's using my bat. Dick was quiet. And I'm not telling people that I'm using Dick Allen's bat because I don't know what I'm going to do. So the bat drops. And I remember rounding third and coming to home. And John Stearns, like, looking at me like, lucky, you know, but he had picked up the bat and noticed the bat. He says, huh, Dick Allen. You know, and then the bat boy takes the – so then it's like the next time up or the third time up, Mickey Lolich again throws the slider, and I clock it over the left field wall over the bullpen.
Nice.
I mean, way out of here. I mean, two bombs. Like Joe Torre said, they added up to over 900 feet.
Yeah. All right.
Now the bat, where's the bat? The bat boy takes it and puts it back in the bat rack. It's not my bat. It's Dick Allen's bat. I'm borrowing it. And nobody in the dugout knew that I was using Dick Allen's bat. So we win the game. And I went like 8 1/3 or something like that. We win 3-1. Lozinski drove in the other run. But I hit two home runs with Dick Allen's bat.
How bad?
And I don't think any other man has ever. I went up to Dick and I said, I don't think we're the only two that has ever hit a home run with your bat.
Yeah.
And he says, so he signed another bat for me. We never know where that bat went. It probably would have gone to the Hall of Fame if they would.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then he signed a bat for me. He says, 2LC. I have it at my home. He says, 2 homers with my bat. How about that?
Oh, tremendous.
That's my pride.
Look at that. Well, and you know what? All that in that story, he also answered one of the questions in the quiz.
Oh.
So he's already 1-for-1 in the quiz. How about that? Right. All right.
You ready to do this,
Should
John?
I go right to it?
LC, you've been warned. This is a quiz about your life. John.
We got to play the song first, right?
Oh, let's play the song right now.
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stump you with Brazier's Quiz.
Isn't that a great song? LC, John, we already talked earlier. He was pretty much at the bar all weekend. So somehow he found the time to, 8 questions, John?
I got 8 questions. And good. The bar we usually set is you have to get 6. But you already know you have 1, right? So you're already 1-for-1. So I think 6 is right. Good bar.
6, yeah, got to get 6 out of 8.
Right, it's bad as life.
That's right.
And what does he win?
Well, I would say he'd win that great ring, 1980 Schmitty replica championship ring supplied by Toyota. But I think he already has one. He might have maybe the real thing. So
in case he loses one in the bathroom, we can give him another one. Right?
Yeah, John.
That would be John.
All right, here we go. Now, here's a problem, LC, is I forgot to bring my reading glasses because I didn't think I'd need reading glasses.
Let me hold it over
on a golf course. No, I think I can. I'm pretty good here.
You're right.
So we will go with the first question.
LC's got some readers.
There you go. Look at that.
Look at that.
Did you see that?
They fold right up.
And they fold right up and come.
Let's see if they work.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
LC, you're the man. Totally.
Nice.
All right, LC, you mentioned you went to Marysville High School in Marysville, Washington, right? Which of these celebrities did not go to that high school? Okay, there's three celebrities that went to that high school. One did not. Tell me who did not. Here's your choices. A, Brady Ballou, who's a professional soccer player, plays for the Tulsa Roughnecks. B, Match Game 76 panelist Charles Nelson Reilly. C, Jared Rome, who's an Olympic discus thrower. Or D, Jake Luton, who's a backup quarterback for the Jaguars right now. So is it Brady Ballou, Charles Nelson Reilly, Jared Rome, or Jake Luton?
Charles Nelson Reilly.
Now,
that's a guess because I have no idea who any of these guys are.
But the only one you knew was Charles Nelson Reilly.
Well, right. Exactly. No, the only name that I said I'm going to say.
Right. I always throw somebody from Match Game 76. I'm obsessed with that show with Nipsey Russell, Bill Collin, Fannie Flagg, you know, right? Brett Summers. That old gang. All right. Good job. You're one for one.
One for one.
All right. One of your first major league teams, as you mentioned earlier, was the Pulaski Phillies, located in Pulaski, Virginia. Right. Which one of these was not a teammate? Okay. So you got three guys were your teammates. Okay. One was not. A, Willibaldo Quintana. Yeah. B, Ed Mollish. Yep. C, Edwin Escuerdo. And D, Rocky Skaliski.
The third guy.
Edwin Escuerdo?
Yeah.
Yes, because he is our in our accounting department.
He's our accountant.
Yes. But Rocky Mad Dog Skaliski.
Rocky.
Was from Spokane, Washington, I'm pretty sure. No, from Wenatchee, Washington. Anyway, he was my roomie in Mad Dog. He'd like drool when he was out in right field.
Right.
He would throw the ball he had no clue where it was going, but Mad Dog, yeah, I remember him.
Did he ever make it to the big leagues?
Willie Quintana was a center fielder. And then the other guy,
Ed Mollish, was actually
Ed Mollish, he was here. Ed's a friend. I was just with Ed not too long ago.
Well, and he was here too because he's on that Temple team that was in the World Series 50 years ago.
Ed's a local guy, and Ed had already been in Pulaski. He was he was there the year before, I think, even, and he was kind of getting. He was a little older, so. But Ed's a great guy.
Yep.
Still
just,
a great guy.
I just met Ed not too long ago.
Yeah.
All right,
he was there.
You already answered the question with Mickey Lolich because I was going to say who you went 8 1/3 innings and gave up one run against the Mets, but also had two home runs. So you got that. Right. So you are 3 for 3.
3 for 3.
All right. In 1980, this is question number 4. 1980, who led the Phillies in stolen bases with 33? 33 stolen bases, 1980. Was it Gary Maddox, Larry Boa, Bake McBride, or Lonnie Smith?
Lonnie Smith.
Lonnie Smith is correct. He's 4 for 4.
Skates.
Tom, he could go all the way.
Skates didn't play the whole season either.
No, he didn't.
Skates, so we called him Skates, and he would take off running, and his feet would go, but he didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. The Fanatic, I think, had a little bit of fun with that, too.
Is it like George Jetson on the treadmill?
Yeah, that's Skates. Remember going around the infield? Yeah. I think the Fanatic, yeah.
All right, question number 5. In 1980, who's a lefty led the team in strikeouts at 286. Who was second with 94? So you as a drop off 286 to 94. Was it Dick Ruthven, Bob Walk, Tug McGraw, or Randy Lurch?
Dick Ruthven.
No, it was actually Bob Walk.
Oh, it was Walk.
Bob Walk. Yeah,
I had to guess on that.
That's
one.
Okay.
I would have guessed Ruthven too on that.
All right, you have three more questions.
Bob Walk was a rookie that year. And then he was gone from the Phillies shortly thereafter, but ended up having a great, not only pitching career, I congratulated him.
And a broadcasting career,
And broadcasting career. So
started game one in the baseball. 1980
yes,
World
he
Series.
Did. Yeah,
all right,
he did.
You are either going to know this right away or you won't know it, right? So it's either a no-brainer or a big brainer. What is Steve Carlton's middle name?
Norman.
Oh,
bang.
I was going to say Norman, Aloysius, Thurston, or Herbert. So you got it right. All right. So now I think you only need one more. All right. So we're doing this interview, as I mentioned, from Philly Cricket before a golf tournament, which of course leads to a Caddyshack question. Yeah. Right. So which candy bar was found on the bottom of the swimming pool in that film? Was it
Babe Ruth?
Bang. Babe Ruth?
You got that one the quickest of all.
I think
it was floating before it went to the bottom.
It was floating.
The Baby
okay,
Ruth.
See, I got it. I can still see it.
All right, you're already qualified for the ring in case you do lose one in the bathroom. So the 8th question is, because I'm sitting right next to the best friend of the Philly Fanatic, what year did the Philly Fanatic, you were there, what year did the Philly Fanatic arrive from the Galapagos Islands? Was that 76?
76, 77, 78, or 79?
I'd say 77.
Oh, off by one. It was 78.
78.
Oh, April 25th, 1978.
It's okay, but you still qualify. You went six for eight.
All right.
You got yourself a fake ring. Congratulations.
Oh, I need
LC, we really appreciate you hanging out. I know you got to get out. And will you take some practice swings?
No, you go out there cold?
I've
got a brace on my back, and I'm just following surgery. And so
gotcha.
I'm preparing for another one, and I'm – golf is not a thing, but I came out to say hi to you guys, and also to say goodbye to some of the teammates that are out here to play.
Yep.
And
yep. I'm going to stick around for a little lunch, but not for the dinner.
And I see they're giving away something, the big giveaway, like great big boxes with a outdoor furnace, what is that, fire pit. I said, make sure you tell Lefty he has to take it with him on the plane. Yeah. Get him all stirred up.
Well, you know what? I'll take Lefty since I live locally.
I don't think so.
But I'm going to take Lefty's. I'm going to see if Lefty can give me one.
They're going to ship it. They're going to ship it to Lefty or all the guys because they, they're going to be, they'll say, oh, my God, this is great. Get a gift. But they're,
Good stuff.
All right. Well, LC, really appreciate you stopping by. Always a pleasure seeing you. And we got to see you more often at the ballpark.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been down lately because, with all the, not because of the, the pandemic and all, just because I've been having, fighting these physical things going on.
And good luck with that.
Yeah. And so that's what I'm still a season ticket holder and have been for many years since I retired. So, we're always rooting the Phillies on and I love living in the Philadelphia area, and this is my home. But my second home is Washington State, where I'm from. So I go back and forth. But I love the organization and all the people that have, you guys been there for a long time, and it's wonderful to see all the people that have been so many years in this one organization and just love their jobs, even from the vendors to the ushers to the and in this heat and terrible weather they put up with and the smile. We saw so many people to walk by all the people that were working in the Hall of Fame Club and all, and they were all getting their stuff together and everything, and it was great to see so many familiar faces from way back when. So
great.
Great organization, the Phillies. Like Dave Dombrowski spoke at Middleton's last night and said that that the Phillies organization has always been known as the greatest organization. And to leave you with the last thing for the Phillies fans that don't know this, but many, many times do I recall Larry Boa, especially Boa, and guys like Dave Cash and Tommy Hutton on first, and not really Dick Allen, but mostly the middle infielders and maybe Schmitty a little bit, but mainly, a lot with Boa, the players that were like from the Dodgers to the St. Louis Cardinals to the, remember, we've only played the National League. We didn't play, interleague. And these guys on base going, how do I get over to this organization? How do I get over this team?
It's great to hear. And so
in the 70s, we climbed into really having good teams. But so many players were, and they'd come back and say, you don't know how many guys that asked about how we can get over to this organization.
It's a great testament to the organization.
It is. It goes way back. From me knowing, met Bob Carpenter, Rulli Carpenter early on, and then, the Giles, and then there was that gang of six, and then certainly Middleton is doing the right thing. And how about Middleton going around to all the fans and the stands and even in this heat and going to visit people
in the upper level, and several times I've seen him up there. So he's
and so goes many a long friend, way, yeah. yeah, so many friends and people that that they call me and tell me that John came up and visited and sat down, was a wonderful conversation and asked questions and got to know them. And so you don't hear of that too much with an owner doing that.
It's got to be the most accessible.
I'm sorry I missed Dave Montgomery. But David was, what a...
We've been very blessed with Bill Giles, Dave Montgomery, John Middleton, the Bucks. I mean, we really have been blessed.
Yeah, so...
Well, this has been a great time. LC, thanks. John, what do you say? I think we're going to get out, and you need practice swings.
I do. I don't know. I mean, you might want to look in a mirror Tom.
Exactly. I haven't played in 3 months. So
I got my hockey slap shot ready to go.
It's going
to
be great. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We're going to sign off from the Phillies Golf Classic. LC, thanks again. And we will see you next time on Phillies Backstage.